Thank you very much, and you did a wonderful announcement. Really, it's my great pleasure to be with all of you on this call. And I believe the subject matter of coming to grips with our identity and then working or staying there is a good way to come to an authentic life. And only an authentic life has, let me say, an access to the power which lies within us. The moment we try to live the life of someone else, maybe social expectations which we feel we have to meet, or comparing ourselves with others, finding out we are not as good as the other person, and then trying to live the other person's life, it won't work. We will stumble and fall. As they say in German, lies have short legs. And imagine a little person with short legs. The little person may be able to run, but after some time, he will fall. Like he is a little person who is not living an authentic life, but who is a life based on false assumptions and false falsity. Only someone who lives an authentic life will be able to come to his best situation. Now I would like to go right into the subject and share things with you which I believe will be of important value for you. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatya Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Not so long back, I received a letter from a student who was asking herself about her identity. She wanted to come to her authentic self. And in her letter, she very much expressed what many people who are desiring to come to their real self, who are tired of playing false roles, have. She said, today I woke up with an interesting thought. What if I'm living a life that had nothing to do with who I am? Am I Andrea Schäfer? No, she wrote, That's only a name in the passport. Am I a student born in 1998, studying at the moment medicine? Am I that? I don't think so. That's only what I like to do at the moment. I also like to play piano, go out with my friends and look at movies. Is that who I am? No, these are only experiences which I have. But who makes these experiences? Who hears through my ears, moves my hands, sees through my eyes? Okay, maybe I am my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions. These are also only experiences. So I'm not my adventures, not my misadventures, not my memories, my likes and dislikes, my feelings of loneliness or satisfaction. I'm not these passing things, so let them not define me. I thought this was very nice. She really thought deeply about life, and I remembered when I was young, I had written a little piece of writing, you would call it nowadays a blog, where I asked myself, I've gone through so many phases of life. I was a young person going to school. Then I became a teenager with many questions and my own apartment. And now I'm in my middle life. But who is that person who's not changing throughout all these experiences? I could continue now this piece of writing and say, and now I'm 66 years of age. And when I visited my father a month ago, he told me, when I was so young as you, 66 years, I thought I would never die, but now I'm 95. And I think every day I die. And I told him that I think we should ask the question, who is that person who's passing through all these experiences? School, university, friends. That person who remains the same although the experiences change. That person who remains inside, watching through the eyes. I wanted to help my father to come to spiritual understanding, and I asked him, Father, you say you are now before death. What is it you would like to be remembered for in this life? It was a very touching discussion. It took place only, I would say, 1.5 weeks ago. And my father looked at me and said, I would like to be remembered as a good father. I said, not as the young boy who has this miraculous career about which the I don't think the whole of Germany, but many speak about this. My father was a little, now you will have to help me. Is it called an apprentice? You know, a young man who learns something in a company. And he became one of the few heads of this company. The company is a large company. You will know it. It's the German Railway. That's a huge operation. You don't want to be remembered as someone who made it from scratch and became a director? And he said, no. I want to be remembered as someone who touched another heart, or another people's hearts. And, you know, career, you know, moving up the ladder in the chicken stall is not impressive because you don't touch people's heart as much as you do when you can share love with those who are close to you. And this was our discussion between son and father, who has already one of his legs on the other side of life. You would call it death. But let us return back to our question. Who is the you who is speaking to me? Who is the Radha Bhakti whom I know since a long time? We had communications in the past when she invited me to join the Toronto Ratha Yatra. It must have been now, I don't know, 15 years ago, really a quiet time. Who's looking at me from through the eyes of that person? Who are you, Abe Solanki, who is looking at me through his glasses? Malvika, Nitilam, who are you? So many, the time has given so many things to us, coming and going. Who's inside? That is very nice. Let me go back to the letter of Andrea. Is she her name? Or are you your name? Is she her skills or things she does, like playing piano? Are you your skills? Is she her many experiences which she has with her friends? Is she her thoughts or emotions? Are you your changing thoughts and emotion? Who is she? Who are you? You all have heard the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that we are not the body, we are not the mind. But so often this philosophy goes right through one ear and through the other ear. I will ask the question in a different way today. I want to ask the question, who is the person inside? Who is making experiences and who stays the same when everything around changes? This is a very important question. I want to help you to come to a very good understanding, and would like to make, as I am, by the way, known to do a little meditation. Is it all right Because I wish you to give an answer to this. Abe, you have a guest, so please give him a chair so that he can sit nicely. Please join us for this meditation. It will be good for you. Please stop multitasking now. Sit erect. Thank you. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Yes. Sit erect, but comfortably. Sit straight, no? Gently roll your shoulders back like this. Open your chest. And when you are ready, close your eyes. We will make a little journey inside. Take a few deep, relaxing breaths. And center yourself. Bring your thoughts away from what is occupying you right now, the endless mental noise arrive in this very moment. It's just you now. Feel the sensations where you sit. And with each breath, relax a little more. Relax some more. Give your entire body a chance to repose. Now, let everything that is going on in your life gently disappear. Your job, or your university study, gone. Your plans for a moment gone. Your various relationships for a moment gone. Your name and achievements gone. Whatever else is there, feelings, images in the mind, thoughts, gently let them go also. Do not dwell on them. And now it's just you and your breath. Simply observe the breath as it flows in and out. You're completely by yourself and with yourself. No need to play a role, You're just by yourself and it's fine. Ask yourself one question. Who am I when everything that is not me is removed? Who am I in my essence? Stay in this space and gently try to become aware of your natural self. In the Gita, Krishna says, the self is without beginning or end, and it does not die when the body dies. It is eternal, without birth or change. You may also turn to the Lord in the heart and say a prayer, but remain for a moment in this space. And ask yourself again the question, who am I when everything that is not me is taken away? What is left then? We do a very few deep breaths. Two more. And gently return to room awareness. Please gently open your eyes. Give yourself a little time and then we will continue. There are two ways of coming in contact with our authentic self and contacting that life via, so to say, of deep spirituality that is within us. Two ways. One is to take things away that are not me. There's a famous story about a young princess who celebrated her 18th birthday, and it was a very wonderful occasion for her, where she was able to present her poems to the artist of her country who had been invited. She celebrated it, but when she came to her sleeping room and put herself on the bed, something very disturbing happened. There was a voice, and the voice asked her, who are you? She was really shocked. She jumped out of the bed and looked under the bed and behind the curtain. No one there. She thought, maybe I'm a little bit overworked. She went back to try to go back to sleep, but again she heard the question, who are you? I will not give you any peace before you answer this question. She said, who are you who's asking the question? And the voice came back and said, I'm yourself. Nonsense! I am myself, said the princess. I'm not schizophrenic. But the voice said, what you think is yourself is only one of your many masks. Who are you? She was so disturbed, she jumped out of her bed, ran out of the castle into the large park, and finally arrived at a place where she had played in her childhood. These were the ruins of the castle which was there before, the castle which her father built. And there she fell into a restless sleep. And in the sleep she had a dream where she saw someone bound to an iron ball by a chain, just looking very fragile towards her. And when the eyes met, she could see, that's myself, bound, chained, forced to do so many things, a slave. And she cried. She cried until the morning. As the sun rose, the bushes parted, and a saintly-looking elderly man came out and just looked at her and said, have you heard the question? What question? She asked. Who are you? And she said, yes, but what does this all mean? And who are you? She was exhausted. And he said, you're the right person. Come with me. So she followed him. He looked very trustworthy. He was an elderly sadhu. And was led by him to a lake. Look into the lake, he said. And when she looked, she expected to see her beautiful face. Princess, 18 years old. A lady who knows the skills of poetry. But what she saw instead shocked her. She saw a face looking back at her that was entirely vain. Is that an English word? Vain. From vanity, no? Self-conscious. Plagued by many, many, many thoughts. Am I good enough? Do I look well enough? Do people like me the way I am? And yes, I'm a princess. That type of image looked back. The sadhu said, princess, do you want to be that? And she said, no. So the sadhu took the face out of the water and just blew like this, and the face disappeared. Look again. She looked again, and there, on that day, my dear listeners, she saw 30 of her faces, of her masks, of her roles, of her wrong identification that had nothing, absolutely nothing to do with her authentic self. She had learned the social conventions. She had learned to fill the roles which the society expected her. She had learned to learn, to work. But she had not learned to find her own self. It's a long story. I will make it short for you. The story ends with all the superfluous false identifications removed. And the sadhu asked a question. Now answer me another question. Up to now I have asked you, do you want to be that? Now I will ask you, who are you? Who are you when everything is removed, when that is not you? It took her the answer didn't come quick. She needed to remember first. She remembered the time when she was with her father at the temples. She remembered when she sat alone before the deity. She remembered how, as a young person, she had sometimes run away from the public life which a princess of a country needs to lead. And when she had gone into nature and had prayed, she needed to remember. She needed to remember that delicate moments, that moments which are usually not so loud, when she was by herself. These moments when she was able to make contact, the higher contact with the Lord. And after she had remembered this, she could say, I am a servant of the Lord. My dear people, digging for your authentic self is often something like digging for well water. Radha Bhakti has visited us in Germany, and I believe, Radha Bhakti, you have also visited Goloka Dham. Am I true? Yes, I see her nodding. That's a beautiful project which the devotees have, which they use as a temple. It has a guest house, and we've just received a huge, huge, huge donation. If I would tell you how much, you would faint. And we are now building other guest houses. We are building a yoga pavilion. The public is very interested to learn about bhakti in a, you know, a relevant way, or a way which is free from all, let me say, limitations, you know, universal. And there, we wanted to have our own drinking water because this place in Germany is known as having many good sources, many good or very good water. So we dug for a well. We first had the man come who, I do not know the word, you know, they go with a little thing, with a little piece of wood like this, and then when the wood starts to dance, it's like a little fork, and they hold the two ends, and then when there's water, it starts to dance. So we got such a waterman, we call him in Germany, and he was then indicating, here, dig here, there you will find excellent drinking water. We did so, and we are happy to say we have a beautiful well now there, and you should all visit us and drink from this well and become healthy and happy and wise in your life. So, but I remember when we were digging for that water, oh, it was not very easy because we had to first go through layers of earth, then through gravel, then through wet clay, then some water came, but it was muddy, and then we had to go even still deeper, and then, wow, we got this very good under-earth water. My dear listeners, coming to your authentic self is also a process. Everyone around you will try to address you by one of your masks which you wear and which they expect you to wear. But coming to your authentic self means to dig a little deeper, and it's worthwhile because when you find your authentic self, you're satisfied in all circumstances. The Bhagavad Gita describes people who are like this. They, what do they say? Brahma, Bhuta, Prasanna, Atma. They're extremely happy. They never lament whatever life throws at them, no problem. They have no desires, no cravings, which drive them crazy, because they found what they need. The authentic self is just full of inner knowing and so much full of happiness. And when you come there, you come to the place from where you can really find bhakti or devotional service to Krishna. It springs forth from the freed self, the unfettered self. So I want to offer you, yes, we are in good time, two suggestions that you can do now. Those who like to take notes, this is a good time to take notes. The first suggestion I want to give to you is the emotional traffic light. And the second suggestion which I want to give to you is nourishing and strengthening yourself. Very quickly about the emotional traffic light. Mostly we lose it and are no longer centered in contact with ourselves when there are circumstances that unsettle our mind and mostly unsettle our emotions. Disappointments, or we are operating under full stress, or we are sad or anxious. So at that time, my dear listeners, do one thing. Use the emotional traffic light. The first is red. How do I make it red? you know, red light. Red light says stop. Don't react. Patiently step one step back and only observe. Like a painter. A painter will look at his painting not like this, but from the distance, and he will see from the distance where it lacks harmony and proportion. Because in one glance, more can be taken in than when you are so close to it. So when you are in life and there is a situation which requires a more thoughtful response, not just an emotional response where you just react, especially when it's a wild thing, just go stop. I don't know how to do this. What? How? Oops. Oh, I can't do it. Here, yes. Stop. Like on the traffic. You know. Then the next thing is yellow. Zip. Maybe like this. Pavitra, yellow. Means wait. And during this period, you think, what could be a more beneficial reaction to the situation? What could I say that is more helpful to the people? Instead of quarreling like an Indian farmer who quarrels for the best price on the market. Think proactively, creatively, what is a good response from a more authentic or deeper place? From the clear water, not the muddied water of your true self. And then green. Then go with a new insight. My dear listeners, young and old and in between, wars can be avoided by the simple emotional traffic light, and it doesn't even cost anything. It's cheap. It's there within you. It's not cheap. It's cheap is not the word. It's, you know what I want to say, inexpensive. It's already there. You have it already. So that is very useful. I think it's very simple. And the imagery of a traffic light speaks very clear to us. Stop, wait, and go. No, that is very clear. Use that today in your relationships. And you will see that you will come to much easier to a place of authenticity than before, where you just react or you are just pulled out of your center because of your own strong emotions which come in difficult situations or in various situations. The second thing which I want to recommend to you for building up your true authentic self is personal time. I call it always time with Krishna. Where you take time out of your busy day, you have to find times when you are more peaceful, and then you nourish yourself by reading things which nourish you, by maybe praying, by It's time when you are alone. Even what you can do is you can put during this time the little distraction monster away. I guess you all have a distraction monster in your pocket. Put it away. Do something almost like we have done before. where you take away everything that is not you. Remember the princess and how mask after mask went away from her. And you just have me time. Or me time is not good. You can also call it me time, but I want to call it time alone with Krishna. And that will nourish you, because Krishna gives to his devotees or anyone who comes to him four things. Anyone who turns to him will first of all feel, oh yes, he's there. The second is, he will or she will feel accepted like they are. Krishna knows you very, very well, and he accepts you nevertheless. Sometimes we think we have to hide ourselves so that the world will not find out what a fool we are. Krishna knows you and loves you just like you are, accepted. And the third thing when you turn to Krishna is, you have a feeling of confidence. And the fourth thing is, he protects. These are four extraordinary qualities of the Lord, which he is ready to display to anyone who turns to him. And we immediately grow in such an atmosphere. An atmosphere where we are accepted the way we are. An atmosphere where confidence is given to us. And where we are also protected. So two things which help you in your search for authenticity. One is the emotional traffic light, so that you are not constantly pulled out of your center. And the second is shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. Everyone can do it, in whatever culture they are, in whatever setting they are, they will feel this. Acceptance, the way they are, confidence and protection. Good. This is what I wanted to share with all of you. I have a little manager here next to me, my alarm clock. I think we have now time for question and answers. Let me just go, Krishna, how long do we go with this? To 8 o'clock. So please, I believe our host, Nitilam, you will tell me the questions which have hopefully arrived. Hopefully, yeah. I have not bored all of you totally. And we will now try to answer them. Yes, please speak.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. That was a very wonderful session. Really, thank you for so many wonderful insights and realization. So the first question that came in is, how can we defer our past selves when we were committing offenses from our current selves, which are better? Because is it not the same person?
Mm-hmm. Nitilam, you have a German-speaking person before you. My English is what it is. Can you just translate this very clearly into simple words? Please do this.
If I understand, it says... So how can we differentiate our past selves? Back when we were committing offenses, mm-hmm. from what we are now, because we were not the same person before and now. So how can we do that?
Very good. Thank you. I understand totally. Thank you. My dear listeners, we all have done mistakes. We all have committed things like offenses, knowingly or unknowingly, when we didn't use the emotional traffic light. We all are faulty living beings. When you see that in the past you have made grave mistakes, the best is a twofold action, so that you can go on and do not leave entangled relationships or unfulfilled karma. You can go to that person and say, I'm very sorry. I said what I said out of ignorance. It must have been hurtful. Please forgive me. And then sometimes, most of the time, people will forgive you, but sometimes they will not forgive you. But you have tried your part, and then move on. Krishna doesn't make a list of your offenses. Krishna makes a list of what you did well. There were once two devotees, Rupa Goswami describes about this, speaking about, why are you a devotee of Krishna? And the devotee said, well, Krishna's qualities are such that even if someone made the worstest of offenses, Krishna is prepared to overlook them. And if someone only did something tiny little bit which was good, Krishna thinks that's the greatest thing. You know, Krishna has a different perspective, and also true devotees and saints and elevated people have a different perspective. They don't count our faults. They count what we do right. And they magnify it. Oh my God, they look at this. This is so great. Because they want to benefit us. So, I know in our movement we talk a lot of offenses, and there is a place to talk about it, because we should try to do things as good as we want. But I believe we should talk more about Krishna's generosity, Krishna's vision, the vision of great devotees, and not cripple ourselves too much. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. So the second question says, does spirit exist in reality? If yes, please prove it.
Very simple. But I will put some tension in it. I had been invited to a conference in Germany with quantum physicists. And had been asked to give some proofs for the soul. Now, these were all clever people, and I decided I would just talk about one personal experience which I had. I had been committed to the hospital in something like 1989, and it was a major surgery, because three ailments were covered. The ailments were not so heavy in itself. It was hernia, and then a torn ligament, and then some removal from of a good tumor, you know, not cancer. But one is better. It's better to remove all types of tumor in case they turn around. So I needed a full narcosis, totally out. And I was given the narcosis by a doctor from Sweden who was learning in Germany to do this. It was one of his first narcosis in real life. And somehow he had given me too little of this narcotica. They give you two things, at least in my case. Something which totally shuts out all the muscles so that they can cut through the muscles. And they also gave me something that all conscious awareness was shut out. But it was too little. And I became aware of the pain. The muscles didn't react, otherwise I would have, you know, not jumped off the operation table, but I would have in pain, you know. But I was aware of the pain, and it was becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. And I tried to lift the hand to show that I'm there, but because the muscles were numb or were shut out, I could not lift the hand, nor speak, nor shout, nor do anything. I was aware, but I could not communicate. And it was terrible. It was like torture. It was really, I thought I would go crazy. I could not. It's indescribable for me to tell you the amount of pain, because they were, that cut through my through the stomach, not stomach, through the, you know, what covers the belly, you know, that layer. Heavy. As I was just thinking, I was not even thinking, as I was just, how can I describe this to you? You would say in Canada, freaking out, but I couldn't say it. All of a sudden, I did dislodged from the body. I was outside the body and looked at the environment. Mind you, I didn't look through the perspective of the eyes. I looked down from a totally different perspective where there were no eyes. My eyes were looking up. I was on the surgeon table. And I could see everything. I could see that something went wrong, because all of a sudden they had cut a main arteria and like a fountain, blood came almost out. It was really dramatic, and I was really very, I was in a different place. I, the perceiving conscious entity, was not even working through my brain, because the brain was also on the surgeon table. But I thought, this is intense, I would like to go out of the surgery theater. And I went out. Then the next thing I thought was, I wonder if Agnidev, it's not the famous Agnidev, but it's a devotee from Austria, is praying to me, just like he had promised. I had requested him, can you please go into the waiting room and pray for me? I'm a little sensitive and not so good with surgery, so please pray that everything goes well. And I somehow, without knowing the, you know, I didn't have a plan of the corridors in the hospital, but I somehow arrived in the waiting room. And yes, he was praying. I saw. Then I went back, and I saw many other things which there's no time now to tell you, because your question is, can you please talk on one thing about this? Is there something like a soul which has perception, and so on? And I went back and I told to the doctor. I remembered conversations when they, before the mistake, you know, I told you they cut something, but before that I was already out. They had talked about golf playing, and I told him the, you know, the beats, as it called, the beat of the movement, the what they talked about in detail, because I had heard it. And the surgeon said, "No way." I said, "Would you like to hear more of what I saw?" I told him everything. And he phoned me after 2 weeks and said, "Can you please come over?" This really changes my paradigm. And I had to tell him everything again. And he said, "Yeah, there are books about this." I didn't believe it. And you are the first one. Then I was finished with my talk, right? The next speaker after me was Pim van Lommel. You can Google him. He has written a very well-received book. Pim van Lommel. He's a Dutch person. Maybe you can put him in the chat, Gokrishna. Pim, P-I-M, Fun, not Fun, Fun. He is a surgeon, listen to this, who does cardio. How is it? He's a cardiologist. Is that a right English word? And he, in his practice, seen many, many people who clinically died, left the body, but returned. You call this near-death experiences. And he has documented the cases. He has interviewed the patients, and all is according to very strict scientific guidelines, which are called non-falsifiability. You know, it's really sure. And he said, "Wow, what the monk said is what I have investigated during my practice, and he has done me a great favor by going through all the stations which happen when consciousness leaves the body." And I want to now start where he has ended and describe from my research how we have to accept there's consciousness beyond the brain. There's consciousness. Consciousness means awareness, no? Beyond the body. There's perception beyond physical perception, and we have no reason to doubt that there is a soul. I felt so, you know, when you are amongst scientists and you, I'm not so trained in, I mean, everyone knows a little, but you know, I'm trying to be a devotee, you know, so I'm not a scientist. Some of you are much more scientifically intelligent than I will ever be. But, you know, when I said the thing and then a hardcore scientist said, "Wow," then I felt, victory, victory, and so on. Because this is a little difficult to prove the soul. It's on another level. It's a spiritual level, and you cannot see. I cannot even see your mind. I think you have a mind. You think, but since it's on a different elemental level, it's not so difficult and not so easy. But this type of experiences can prove it. I didn't go into philosophy. Of course, I couldn't refrain myself from quoting a few Gita verses, but in a universal spirit. And that is what I would answer to you. Thank you for this question. It was wonderful that you asked this question. Good. Next question.
Thank you, Maharaj. So the next question, the person says, thank you for sharing the story of your father. I also want to be remembered as someone who touched people's heart. But I also have career goals and also some career pressure from my parents. The question is it okay to pursue a material career and spiritual life at the same time?
Absolutely. I even believe for most of us, this is properly a need. There is a difference between a need and a desire. A need, like eating, sleeping, is something which is absolutely essential to our human well-being. And for most of us, establish ourselves, earn an income, prove ourselves in some ways. Ourselves means our intelligence and our capabilities is a need. And if we don't do it, then some human needs remain unfulfilled. Krishna consciousness is not about stopping human needs. It's developing the spiritual side. It's developing, or it's about inner growth. But it is not good if you stop a human need, because you may try to run away from that need. But it will, if it's a real need, it will stick to you. And if you have not done it, it will boycott your spiritual development. You will think, oh, why have I not done it? I have seen this with young men in Krishna consciousness who thought, we are not the body, we are the soul, so why should we enter a married life, because the married life is based on the differentiation between a man and a woman. Otherwise, you don't marry. You know, it's on the physical platform. And they have not done it because they thought this need is not necessary. And they have postponed it and postponed it. But after some time, the need which had stuck to them had been so loud that they were disturbed in their spiritual pursuit. Let me give you another example. Let us say you think, well, I'm not the body, I'm an eternal part of Krishna. Let me not sleep. This is only for the body. My dear listeners, after some time, your sleep deprivation will seriously stop you in your pursuit. You will feel too tired, and if you continue to ignore that, your nerves will become very thin and very weak, and you harm yourself. Needs are to be fulfilled. Therefore, look at the Vedic scriptures. They say, as young people, most probably everyone has a need or most have a need to live in companionship, and marry. then there needs to be some income. So that should be taken care of and addressed when we are young, when we have the energy from 25 to 50. And then in modern times, I have seen it is not always practical that the husband and the wife take vanaprastha with 50 because of various circumstances. But the Vedic civilization has not stopped us from fulfilling our needs. Just do it in a way that is not harmful for your inner growth, for your spiritual development, and so on. Yes.
So the next question is, sometimes we feel forced to wear a mask even in our temples. We have to hide our struggles and who we think we are because otherwise we feel judged. What can we do about this?
I know what you're talking about. When you are dressed in a way which is different from going into the temple. There's a lot of judgment. Unfortunately, that is true. I believe the cause of this needs to be seen. See, we have a high standard. Our movement by Prabhupada's grace talks really about genuine spirituality. It is not a wishy-washy explanation. And because some of us may not have yet reached to deep, deep spiritual insights and can therefore not see it in another person, we judge externally. We do not look internally what is in their eyes. This has always been a problem. There are, not just in our movement, there are lots of literature. There is one work, you will like it very much, Bhaktamala, where there was this very, very nice, I should tell you about it. There was this poor street sweeper lady. Maybe her name was Kamalini, maybe. Her name started with K. That is what I know. And she loved Lord Jagannath in Puri very much. So she would cook every morning khichdi for Lord Jagannath, and because her love was so strong, Jagannath would come before he would receive his morning offering and eat the khichdi of this street sweeper lady. Now once, a devotee came to the street sweeper lady, saw her cooking and offering her khichdi and said, "This is not good. You have not done this right. You have not done that ceremony. You have not chanted these mantras. Then only you can offer to Lord Jagannath." So the next day, she did that. But as a result, she was late. And then when Jagannath came, he ate the khichdi, but he could not even take the remnant of khichdi from his mouth. It got stuck there. And he returned on the altar without having washed his hands, and there was a speck of khichdi. And the priests said, "Oh no, what is happening?" And then Jagannath communicated to the king and said, "I am I was late, and I had this kittery here because I was at the house of my devotee who chanted with love. But then there was a devotee, another devotee coming and saying, you must do this ritual and that rite and those mantras and that and that and that. And therefore she was late, and therefore I was also late. I could not even wash my mouth. And then Jagannath said something wonderful. He said, it is not good to criticize another devotee for his or her way of worship. I do not wish that. Everyone can express their bhakti in their way. So those who look upon you with scornful eyes, they want that everything goes well, but they can only judge externally. They do not know, they do not know that you came in the temple to finally see the deities, to participate in the kirtan maybe, or meet other devotees and talk with them, important discussions. Don't be angry with them. They want only the best. But And be clever a little bit. When you go to the temple, you go to the house of the Lord where there is a certain way of doing things, then you may dress in a way that doesn't raise an eyebrow and do things that will not, if you're strong inside, that will not interfere with your authenticity. I think it's wise, it's normal. When we go to, you know, I go once a year into the church and I behave properly. I do not jump up and down and chant Hare Krishna. I'm dressed in dhoti, but I do everything. I pray and I sing the songs in the church, because the people appreciate and so on. But I remain myself. We should not judge, nor should we become disturbed when we are judged.
We have one last question.
Yes.
It's the topic of mental health is not always addressed within our Krishna consciousness community. Maharaj, what are your views on that, and what are some recommendations you can provide for youth to care for their mental well-being, particularly in our society?
I thank you very much. Really, you have such wonderful questions, and it's such a nice assembly. I can feel the good energy. Thank you for the question. My answer is, live the tree of life. What is that? Every human being has four types of areas where he or she must look for well-being: spiritual, physical, emotional or mental, and social. You can compare it with a tree. Gokrishna, you know how to paint a tree. You please make a nice tree for the people. Gokrishna is just assisting us here. A healthy tree needs to have four things intact: the roots, the trunk of the tree, the protective bark, and the overarching top of the tree, where there are fruits and so on. And so in much the same way, we need to address all four areas, and then the single areas are also well. You cannot have mental well-being without being enough physically healthy. The physical and the mental are like the trunk and the bark of the tree. They are very much connected to each other. You need also for the well-being... Can you see? The light is somehow not so good. Here are the roots. Can you see? Roots of the tree of life must be there. This is your spiritual well-being, your connection with Krishna. Then this is the body, the physical well-being, the emotional well-being, and the social well-being. All this together takes care of your mental well-being. All this together takes care of your physical well-being. All this together takes care of your social well-being. All this together takes care of your spiritual well-being. They are connected. But still, I want to give you, let us say, three tips for just isolated mental well-being, which are especially for our movements. Please listen carefully and think deeply. The first is you need a focus in life. Something where you feel enthusiastic about, something which you feel is a worthwhile goal of your life. It is in the psychology, the search for meaning. A book has come out, Viktor Frankl, where he has shown that people who had a purpose, a goal, my word would be a focus, could survive even the heavy, heavy, heavy torture in the Nazi camps. You need a focus. Very important. Without a focus, you're going anywhere and everywhere. Focus can be a goal of life. Focus can be a rewarding, nourishing relationship or relationships, plural number. Then you need, and this might come as a surprise, you need physical health. You are all young. I cannot talk about workouts for ladies, but for men, you know, what is it called? When you go... Squats. The other... push-ups. And this coming forward. What is it called? Crunches, we get them together, is a good workout, walking regularly, running maybe, very important. People, there is a relationship with depression and not moving. People who don't move, whose circulation is not going on, they tend to be more depressive, more negatively organized. And the third thing you need to do, listen very careful, please. I'm very invested in this. Stop the negative mental noise which is in there. These things which always tell you you are not good enough. Comparing yourself with the achievements of others. That is so dangerous, this inner mental noise. You have to stop it and replace it with something different. That's why I think it's so important that we read in these uplifting works like the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam. These are wisdom traditions, my dear people. I know we are sometimes disappointed with the Hare Krishna Hare Rama movement. We have made our experiences which were not always good. I know this. I understand young people. I have a lot of contact with young people. But you can't throw away the baby with the dirty bathing water. There are really, the wisdom traditions have helped people throughout the thousands of years to remain on a positive course. Where would people be without them? They would just fight and so on. And they wouldn't know any positive thing, any good thing, any development of inner growth. So therefore, either you will replace the negative chat, inner chatting, with something positive, or as I do, I'm of course a monk, I know, but I think it is relevant. I'm reading regularly the Bhagavatam, Gita. I read also other things. At the moment I read a little book on Zen poesy. They have an interesting outlook. I need it because I have to give a Buddhistic, I have to give a lecture to Buddhists, but I find also something very valuable in that other traditions. Mental health. Thank you for answering, asking this question. You all asked such relevant questions. Yes, mental health. My first answer is it's not isolated from the tree of life, the spiritual roots, physical well-being, mental well-being, and social well-being. A lot, my dear listeners, can happen when you have meaningful relationships, nourishing the relationships here in the crown of the tree of life. Whoa, so much can happen. Thank you. I hope it is not too much information. Two things. For mental health, you have to look at it at a whole, with your whole life. It's not just isolated. All the areas have to be good. But if you address it with a singular focus, okay, let's focus only on mental health now, then I would suggest focus, physical well-being, and stop the negative chatter. A good way is, which all psychologists will agree with, to start your day with gratitude. I am grateful that I'm alive. I'm grateful that I have an opportunity to grow and to also go to bed with gratitude. Thank you for giving me these opportunities to learn. I will think about how to make things better like this. So, my dear listeners, we have now 1 minute. We are 1 minute over time. So I'm a little bit in a situation. I have a very amazing guest today with me. You would love to meet him. He has started a school in Cambridge for young people, a school which emphasizes beyond the normal curriculum, things like helping the children to manage anger. Maybe we should just ask James to just greet everyone, because he would love to see everyone. He's a really a jewel. And I have promised him to, I had to work all day. Oh, work is not the word. I'm producing a lot of content at the moment. I'm a little late. I have to go with him and we have to discuss about a project where he gives some advices to us. But I thank you so much. I now see only Radha Bhakti Nitilam Vialapin. You did wonderful as a host. Really, congratulations. I have a picture here of Malvika Garg. Abe is with us all the time. What a pleasure to see you and your good friend who came in. Name of the friend, please.
My name is Varun.
Valap?
Varun.
Good, Varun. Nice that you came. And then Dula Purkais is also there. These are the people I see. So our teacher comes. He is just coming up the steps. He is an Englishman. this is James. These are wonderful people. In Canada, they are all thinking of their career and their development in life. They will be doctors and university professors and whatever. Any word you can tell them from a teacher's perspective?
About their career paths?
Yeah.
That's a big question. I think the biggest reflection I had from my own practice is when you find something that you love, it no longer becomes work. So my advice: find something you love doing, and be the best at doing that.
Yeah, wonderful.
The trouble is finding it, because there'll be lots of people telling you what you should be doing. and there'll be lots of advice from different places. I'm sure Maharaj has guided you, but the more reflection you can have to really understand what your dharma, what is your purpose would be, and then be the best at it.
Thank you. I'm known for this, to put a gun on people's head and then they have to...
And then ignore my advice.
And then say, we are just closing this. Yes. Okay. Wonderful advice. Wonderful advice. Okay, so Nidhilam Vialapin, you should now close the session properly, and then we will disperse.
I'd like to thank Maharaj for being here with us and sharing all of the wonderful realizations with all of us. And also thank all of the participants who have sent their questions through and discussed with all of us. And up next, we'll be going into the youth activity. So the link has been posted in the chat, so everyone can just go and join from there. Thank you, everyone. Hare Krishna.
So then I say goodbye to everyone. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful ongoing retreat. And all the best for you from my heart. Hari Bol.